Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our podcast series. My name is Adi Kanto. I'm a research associate at the Institute for National Security Studies, INSS. I have the great privilege to host today a colleague of mine from Berlin joining us today, Dr. Henning Lahmann. Hello and good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Adi. Hello from Berlin.
So due to the latest corona crisis and its effect on Europe, especially worldwide, but also definitely on Europe, I'll be talking with you in the next half hour. But before, I would like to introduce you to our viewers and to our listeners. Dr. Henning Lahmann is a senior researcher at the Digital Society Institute at the International Business School in Berlin, the ESMT. He did his PhD in international law and cybersecurity and was also in Israel. He was a visiting fellow at the Heinrich Böll Foundation, Tel Aviv, and at the Israel Public Policy Institute, and also a visiting researcher here in the Institute for National Security Studies in 2019. He's working on disinformation and information warfare in the public international law. So again, thank you very, very much for joining us, especially in this crucial hour where we're dealing with unprecedented pandemic worldwide and also
indeed,
in Europe.
Yes.
So Henning, I'd like to, I have a few questions, of course, prepared for us for this talk, but I think we should first start with you reporting on what you see. I mean, you're situated right now in Berlin. Can you tell us what you see outside your window? When you look outside your window, do you see a movement of people in the streets? Are Germans still, are Berliners still going out in the public space?
So I think my situation here in Berlin is the same as for most people all over the world right now. I am mostly sitting at home. I haven't really left my apartment for the past 2 weeks, other than for like grocery shopping, a brief walk here and there. And I think at least for the past, let's say 7-8 days, the city has been extremely quiet. There's some movement outside. There are some cars in the streets. There are some people in the streets, but it really has, everything has slowed down. Some people, of course, have to go to work. The trains are still running. When you go to the parks, the weather was very nice and spring-like the past 3 days. So if you go to a park, you will see people, but usually not in groups anymore because that's officially restricted now. You can get a fine if you are in a group of like three or more people. So you're only allowed to move around in pairs. And even if you are only with one person, that person should usually be from your own household. It should be a spouse, partner, of course, if you have a family and you have children, then you're allowed to go with your family. But otherwise, you are supposed to stay in. And I, as far as I can tell, of course, it's hard to say because I'm inside, so I don't see what's going on outside. But from what I hear and from what I read is that most people do obey to these restrictions. Mostly, of course, when you go to the supermarket, there will be lots of people, but there's a lot of care going on now to how close you can go to other people, or how to stand in line. And I feel like it's so far it's working. What we don't see, but it's too early to tell, is a flattening of the curve. So far, we have not seen any visible results in a decrease of daily cases, or at least a decrease in the exponential rise of cases. But so far, experts have been optimistic that from starting next week, we should see a flattening. So we'll see.
Okay. That's definitely more optimistic news. So you started mentioning also the situation in Germany. I'd like to also give our viewers and our listeners a bit of a, you know, updated number, what the situation is at the moment. So worldwide, we're talking about more than 500,000 infected with the coronavirus. among which more than 30,000 have died. In Germany right now, we're talking about more than approximately 54,000 infected with the coronavirus, and among which 400 died. 400, this is in percentage, we're talking about 0.5% death rate, which is comparatively, when we relate, when we see also in comparison to other European states, it's a very, very low number, low percentage of death. How do you explain, without, you know, we're not experts, we're not medical doctors, and we're not experts on virology, but how do you, when you hear public, the media, how do they explain the very, very low number of the death rate in Germany in comparison to other countries?
There are mostly two points that explain this phenomenon. One of them is that, at least this is what's the word is out there, that Germany has started testing early and extensively. So due to a better number of testing, we have a better idea of what the actual caseload is. And so we have counted more people that are infected. And we are, because of that, probably closer to the actual number of the case fatality rate that the virus actually causes. So because we test more people, we can more accurately say what the case fatality rate is, because what everyone says is that what we don't undercount is the actual deaths from the virus. So this number that we have, the latest one that I have, is 455. That is most likely the accurate number for all of Germany. If we have the actual number of cases, we don't really know, but we probably test more than other states that have a higher case fatality, or seem to be having a higher case fatality rate. For example, the most striking example, I think, in Europe right now is the UK, that has, I think the last time I checked, like 17,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, but already over 1,000 deaths. So that's like a staggering case fatality rate, but it's probably because they started testing very late and they don't test enough. So they don't know where the caseload is.
Yes.
So that's one explanation.
Yeah,
I want to
put more emphasis on, you just mentioned the UK case, and let's really talk about the different models of strategies that states have taken in Europe in order to cope with this virus. Well, we do see more and more, I would say, in the past days, more and more similarities between the different regimes and different political systems, but what we haven't seen last week or 2 weeks ago. So the UK chose definitely a different path a week ago. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, definitely changed its course and his course, yes, and now is definitely becoming more and more similar to Germany. Why do you think there is a difference between these strategies? I mean, how do you explain the fact that Merkel decided in a way to give very strict guidelines, I wouldn't say from the beginning on, but she was one of the first countries in Europe to understand how severe the situation is. Maybe this is also what bought Germany this window of time that Italy and Spain weren't lucky to have.
Yes, maybe that is true. We will have to see. One thing that people say about the German situation is that we are only at the beginning of the wave that Italy already faced. So just to finish that thought from before, the death load that we have, the very low death rate so far, is also a result of, like, our ICUs are not overwhelmed. Like, we have hospital capacity because we just don't have too many cases. But everyone says that we are probably at the beginning of a wave of having more severe cases in the coming 2-3 weeks. But to your question, I think it comes down to political culture. If you see the 2-3 countries that have a more laissez-faire understanding of measures at the moment, as you said, UK has now changed the strategy, but the Netherlands have not. The Netherlands are still, like, much more lenient when it comes to, like, shutting down shops, shutting down I think they've shut down the schools, but they have definitely like more shops open than other countries. Sweden is another example that has a much more liberal policy. And especially when it comes to the UK and Netherlands, I think they have a much more deeply ingrained culture of liberalism as compared to like countries like Germany, like Poland, like Spain or Italy. And at least what Boris Johnson said a couple of weeks ago is that he, and it's not, probably not wrong, that he was afraid if the UK starts with draconian measures too early, people will grow tired of those measures quickly and then stop abiding by the rules. Whereas I think in Germany, maybe there's more a culture of the law-abiding citizen that is more easily reined in than a citizen of the UK or the Netherlands. So I think this is at least one factor that one needs to keep in mind. But now, as you said, the UK changed course, and I don't see the Netherlands not imposing more restrictions in the coming weeks.
Thank you for this. I would like to slowly dive more and more now into the German society and the German state of affairs. How does it look like? Also concerning the economy. I mean, we're not only we, I mean, it's also in the media discussing a lot of health issues. But I really am more interested now also to discuss with you on the social political implications of a crisis like this and a scale like this. This is worldwide. And it's affecting, of course, the economy of every state around the world. And it's affecting also Germany. From your perspective as a researcher, I would like to know, how do you estimate, how much is the government, how much do you feel that the government is intervening in the basic, the very basic lives of people right now, unemployed Germans who just got out of the work circle and don't know how to finish the month? What is the government in Germany right now doing in order to help these people?
So the interventions, of course, politically have been severe. We are not allowed to go outside. This is almost, I would say, the most severe restriction of liberty that you can impose as a state. When it comes to the economy, I think we're just at the beginning of starting to consider what we can do now to help the economy. And what we've done so far in Germany, what the politicians have tried so far, is the same tools that they used after the financial crisis in 2007-2008. So to prevent companies from letting workers go, they allow companies to cut the hours, and because of that, of course, also the wages. And then the state pays for at least a certain amount, a certain percentage of what is then not being paid by the companies. So that the idea is, and I think it worked fairly well in 2008, that that the companies can keep the workers on, the employees at the moment, and then hopefully the employees can still get enough money to make do, to pay the rent, to pay the bills, to pay for groceries. And then we wait till the end of the crisis. This is the most, this is the biggest measure to date, I think. And then we'll see how the crisis goes on, like how long it takes, how long we're gonna stay in lockdown. Germany has started to reconsider their very the very strict principle of austerity. So we had like a restriction of any state debt that is now softened. We'll see how that goes. But as I said, we're at the beginning, and we'll see in the next 4 weeks how. If we need more measures, what we haven't considered so far, when I compare it to the United States, for example, is just like handing out money to every citizen. We have now programs to help freelancers and small businesses, and to help them with their expenses. But so far there's no, let's say, universal basic income for every citizen, what other states have considered. And we're not there yet.
Okay, thank you. You know, looking also at other countries, there are, you know, the governments are really considering right now what would be the best way, first of all, to educate the public concerning this crisis, concerning the danger of this virus, and how to keep people indoors, how to keep them in the house without letting them, making them understand how severe the problem really is. Yes. And there's always these tensions, especially in democracies. We're talking about democratic regimes, this tension between public health and the basic freedoms. Do you feel right now, from what you see, from what you hear also in the news, and then and also, you know, the whole public discourse around you, is the how severe is the tension right now in Germany with regards to this, the tensions between letting go a little bit of our freedoms in order to take care of the health of society?
I think because of Germany had the advantage of Italy being the first country that was severely affected. And then we had cases of Germans coming back from Italy being infected. We had cases of Germans who were on skiing vacations in one particular Austrian town where there, we had a lot of cases. So we had like warning signs early. And when the government then imposed those restrictions, I think the most of the public had already understood that something needs to be done for a couple of weeks. So right now, my feeling is that the population understands that this is a necessary step, and they are willing to follow the advice.
You were referring also, in our talk when we prepared for this talk, you were referring to this rallying around the flag.
Yes, the I wanted to.
How long do you think this will keep rallying around
the flag? I don't know. So, exactly. So what I wanted to say is because the government has made an effort to explain these measures and to explain why they think they're necessary, there has been what you just said, this rallying around the flag, rallying around the government, because there's a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of trust in the government right now and in their wisdom, also because they made it a point to openly and transparently consult experts. So we have a lot of virologists, epidemiologists from leading German universities who, on behalf of the government, explain the measures and explain what's going on. And I think there's really help. So there's right now there's a lot of trust, but you're correct to point to the danger that at the moment no one knows how long these measures will have to be kept up in order for the threat from the virus to subside. So if this goes on for another 3 weeks, I think this is fine. If it goes on for another 2 or 3 months, and this is very easily imaginable at the moment, I think then we're gonna have more tension. At the moment, I don't see this tension. I think I'm surprised by how understanding everyone seems to, of course not everyone, of course there's a debate around like what does this do to our economy, isn't the economy similar to discussions that we have in other countries, isn't the economy too important to like have these measures for like longer than 2 weeks, because then the unemployment will rise and we're gonna have a severe crisis. Is it worth it? Of course we have this discussion, but the majority, I would say, at the moment understands that this is necessary in order to protect certain parts of the population, the elderly, the sick. But everyone can get severely ill from this virus.
Yes.
And so we have to see what happens in 4 or 6 weeks, I think.
Okay, the reason that I want to make more emphasis on this point is because we remember Europe. We remember Europe just before this crisis broke out, and we remember also right-wing extreme groups that were. What is happening right now in Europe is that borders are closing, and also Germany is closing its borders, definitely for movement of people, not yet products, but of course movement of people. And I want to know, I want to ask you, what do you think are the implications of a step like this on the in the long term? Because we heard Viktor Orban from Hungary saying, for example, a few days ago that he was asked why he closed the universities in Hungary and not the schools. That was more than a week ago. And what he said was that there are foreigners in the universities, and and foreigners import this virus, and therefore we have to close the universities. So this is actually sounds like a very xenophobic call against migrants, against foreigners who are believed by populist leaders to import this virus. I think these are very, very dangerous steps. And we know these voices, positions, political positions are to be found actually everywhere in Europe, yes. Not just Hungary. And of course, also in Germany. And we remember what happened in Germany in the past year and also in 2019. And more and more right-wing extremist groups are being heard, are now in the mainstream of society. How long do you think they'll so-called keep silence and observe the situation without actually maybe taking advantage of this and using it for their own agenda, pushing for more closing of borders, for more separation between Germans and so-called foreigners or so-called migrants? How great is the danger? Because you were referring before that this, you know, not knowing how long this crisis will take. The question is how long, for how much is, when people are taking a big breath now and saying, okay, a few days, a few weeks, what if it's gonna be a few months? How will this affect the German society on the long term when there's an economic crisis right around the corner threatening to really destabilize the lives of each and every one in Germany? Do you see more violence maybe in the streets? Or also, we're going to go also to the social media and ask you as an expert for disinformation what you see there, if you see already people calling for more actions concerning this.
Yeah, so to start with what you at first said about Viktor Orban, I think this is an important distinction to make. It makes a big difference right now if we have a right-wing populist in power or if we have a right-wing populist in opposition. I think in those European states where the right-wing populists are already in power, they are very much in a position to exploit the current situation for their own goals. It's easy, of course, for Orban, but also for the Polish government, for example, to use this to push more against foreigners within their own borders, to push harder policies against refugees, for example, against migrants. Because they're already in a position to impose these measures. And I think this is a very welcome situation for them now and for their agenda. But in countries where the right-wing populists are not in power, I think they're having a very difficult time right now. We see it in Germany since the crisis began like a month ago. The polling numbers of the AfD have been dropping because the AfD has been, so far at least, been exposed as basically being a one-trick pony. Because they blame everything on the migrants coming from Syria, from Northern Africa, from other parts of Africa. And no one has been able to make an argument that they are spreading the virus. They're obviously not. The virus is not coming from Africa. The virus is not coming from the Middle East. The virus is a global pandemic that started in China, but has been exposed, has been spreading because of globalization, because of how people travel. And it's has been impossible for the AfD to construct a narrative to blame the refugees or the migrants from those parts of the world. So what they've been trying to do is, at least in the beginning, they tried to construct this narrative of like, oh yeah, we've always been pro closing the borders. And if we had closed all the borders quickly, then the virus would never have reached Germany, which is of course not true and easily debunked because the virus came here with German travelers who returned from China, who returned from Italy. And now it's endemic here. So it's easy to disprove this. And they just, so far they've not come up with an alternative strategy to exploit the situation. When we look at social media, of course there are, as always, there's a lot of disinformation. There's a lot of, there are a lot of conspiracy theories that always tend to be anti-Semitic. There's this, of course, there's someone alleging that this virus is an invention by Bill Gates and Soros and is being exploited by the Rothschilds. You always have these kinds of theories, especially in times of crisis, but so far...
Increase as an expert looking, observing this no. online? Increase in the
of
past
course,
month?
Of course, there's an increase in the terms of like there being these conspiracy theories that we've already had are now being connected to coronavirus. But other than that, they're very much at the fringes right now, and I don't see them gaining any traction. And we've also seen a lot of disinformation being spread by both China and Russia with different motivations. The Chinese are trying to deflect responsibility to like blame other countries. There's this narrative out there that the virus comes from the United States and not from China, from Wuhan. The Chinese are doing that for their own image. The Russians have been spreading a lot of disinformation about the virus through their usual channels like RT, Sputnik. And they are pursuing their usual goals of like trying to sow discontent, to sow confusion within Western societies in order to weaken, for example, the EU, to weaken democracies in Western countries. So basically what we've already seen in the past 3 to 4 years, what the Russians have been trying to do, they now connect these narratives to coronavirus in order to pursue these goals.
And how can the German legal system, is there a way to fight this? If in case there is an increase in disinformation on German social media, how is the legal system in Germany coping with this?
Well, the same way they were coping with this before, I think there's a higher willingness of the platforms to act against disinformation that's connected to the virus. So Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, they've all made statements that they will act faster than before against disinformation about coronavirus. So when they were before, they were maybe reluctant to do something against certain narratives, false narratives that were out there about like the refugee crisis or our economic system or whatever. Now they seem to be acting quickly in order to rein in those narratives. The German legal system, I think so far, has not seen any urge to act against those false narratives, because they have been so far on the fringes. They really haven't gained any traction outside of very like radical right-wing circles. And so far, I don't think they've been the focus of state measures, because we are focused on the virus itself right now and how to recover. But again, if we see an increase over the next weeks, and if we see more people maybe spreading those stories, maybe there will be a bigger motivation to act, especially if it has a destabilizing effect. But so far, this effect has not been observed. So right now, I'm pretty optimistic that we are not in immediate danger. Same yeah. with what you asked earlier. Do we see an uptick in violence against minorities, for example, against certain
or
parts of the population?
Anti-Semitism, for example, or maybe just people pushing more and more towards reducing the freedoms and increasing more the security in the public health. You know, in the name of public health, we're tracking now more people. In the name of public health, do you see these tendencies happening? And that really, we have to approach now the end of this talk. So really,
yeah, it's future scenario.
Will Germany go also in this line in a month or two?
I don't think so. There has been a discussion ever since these measures were imposed by South Korea of like tracking people with their cell phones. Same, of course, in Israel. Of course, the Germans see those countries imposing those measures, and then there's a discussion about it. And our health minister, federal health minister Jens Spahn, has proposed to do the same, to have people tracked via the cell phones.
Can you tell us what were the reactions in Germany towards?
Yes, there's a lot of skepticism, and so far it's not been taken up as an official policy. And I think the discussion will continue, especially if we see in the next weeks that the measures that we have imposed so far are not working. So if there's not a decrease of new cases, if there's a massive increase of fatalities, I think there will be a renewed discussion, and maybe at some point the population will be more willing to allow this to happen. But at the moment, this is not a serious proposal, and I don't think this is going to be implemented anytime soon. But I mean, we have to talk again in 2 months, and then maybe everything's different.
So this is definitely an optimistic view as of today towards the situation Germany is in at the moment. Last question, just before we finish. I'm asking you as an expert, and also, as a German citizen and as a European citizen, looking at the situation the EU is now in, and obviously Europe is now experiencing the worst crisis it ever had to go through since the end of World War II. It's in the center of the spreading of the coronavirus right now. What do you think will be with the European Union? How we see a more and more lack of solidarity between the states. How unified will the EU stay in a few months? What do you think?
That is my biggest concern. My biggest concern is I am pretty optimistic when it comes to the German society and how we are dealing with the crisis so far. I am worried about the European Union. I think, for the moment, when it comes to like the health measures and closing borders and having more restrictions of like freedom of movement within the EU, I think the European Union can survive that, because I think there's a point to be made that these measures should stay on the national level, because this is a good unit to deal with these problems. And there has been some increasing solidarity now. For example, German hospitals and in several German states, hospitals have started to admit patients, critical patients from France, from Italy, because we still have the capacities in our hospitals and the Italians do not. So there has been an increase of solidarity. I think the critical moment will be when the virus retreats slowly, when we have working measures against the virus. The economic crisis will stay. And this is where the European Union, in my opinion, failed in 2008 and then in the following Euro crisis, that we really let down countries that most needed the EU, like Greece, like Italy, like Portugal. So I think the critical moment for the EU will not be the coronavirus itself, but the economic crisis that follows. And then I hope that this time the richer countries, the northern countries, Netherlands, Germany, Finland, the Baltic states, have more, compassion for like more suffering member states. Maybe Germany will be this most suffering state. We don't know, but I hope that this time we have an actual like common policy towards getting over the crisis, the economic crisis that will follow. So yeah, we'll see. But I'm worried about that.
Dr. Henning Lahmann, thank you so, so much for this talk. And let's hope for better days for
My
Israel.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ali.